Are we kidding ourselves if we think that we're a European country sitting in the middle of Asia and that we need to recognise where we sit and why it's important to forge links with the countries that are around us? Dr. Tim Soutphommasane is from the National Centre for Australian Studies and also the author of Don't Go Back to Where You Came From. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Trevor. How are you?
Good, Tim. Firstly, can you give us a definition of multiculturalism?
It's a good question, Trevor, because it means different things to different people many of the time. I think we often understand multiculturalism as a social reality, and it's just something that means the cultural diversity that we come across in everyday lives. Means the food that we get to experience on a weekly level, the fact that we have people from different parts of the world living in one place together harmoniously. The multiculturalism I try and expand on in the book is slightly different in that I think while we're very good at understanding multiculturalism as a social reality, we're not so good at understanding what multiculturalism means in policy terms. There's no question that Australia is, in reality, a multicultural society. I mean, 25% of people were born overseas. Another 20% of Australians have at least one parent who was born overseas. But this has been underpinned by a policy of integration, and the multicultural policy that I talk about in the book is a policy of citizenship, which is really about ensuring that those who arrive in Australia as immigrants undertake a journey towards becoming a fellow citizen and an Australian. So it's a policy stance about ensuring that people have the means to express their own sense of who they are and where they're from, but also have a chance to eventually become part of Australian society and can participate as full and equal members.
Tim, do you think that like most Australians, and you could almost say all Australians, even though some people say, I don't agree with multiculturalism, I don't like these people coming here, I don't like that person coming here. But then when you get down to talking to individuals and looking at it on a personal level, they might say, oh, look, I don't like Vietnamese coming here, I don't like Muslims coming here. Then on an individual level, they might say, oh, yeah, but apart from Muhammad that I work with down the road, he's a good bloke.
Oh, I've certainly had that before from schoolmates at school, and you get tinges of that too, even today as I encounter people. I think the objection that people have to multiculturalism when they do express opposition to it is to the idea that you don't have a unifying Australian identity, or to the idea that your cultural heritage might count for something more than your own individuality. Now, I think that it's perhaps a leap in reasoning to jump to that, because when we do talk about multiculturalism, we should be clear about what it means. And for me, it means a policy that is about, yes, recognising that difference is part of, or diversity is part of, the Australian identity. Yes, it refers to policies that aim to help settle and integrate new arrivals in Australia. And yes, it refers to policies of citizenship. But if you take all those things together, I don't think we're talking about anything that's terribly controversial or terribly divisive. If anything, they're devices for ensuring that people can feel that they belong to Australian society and can participate in it in equal terms. So in that sense, multiculturalism, though it's a word about culture, is actually a civic thing. It's about ensuring that everyone gets a fair go, regardless of where they're from.
I mean, it's not as if it's anything new, and it's not as if it isn't done all over the world.
Well,
and especially, but I guess when I say that, especially when you take a look at the abilities now to travel, and that there are now more cultures being seen in and within other cultures.
There's certainly no doubt that diversity is an ever-present feature of life across the world, as you say. The only reason I hesitate when you say it's practiced around the world is that we shouldn't forget that our particular form of multiculturalism isn't always practiced around the world. So recent years, we've seen a retreat from multiculturalism from a number of European countries and governments.
And that's... Yeah, sorry, go on.
For example, people such as David Cameron in the UK, Angela Merkel in Germany, and former French President Nicolas Sarkozy have all expressed their intense opposition to multiculturalism and their belief that it's failed. But when they talk about their failed multiculturalism in Europe, it's a very different experience to what we're talking about here in Australia. So in Germany, for example, you've never really had multiculturalism in any meaningful form, because whereas here we like to think of immigrants as future citizens, in Germany for a very long time, traditionally, immigrants were simply guest workers. They were visitors who were there temporarily rather than people who were there to settle permanently. So it wasn't until the year 2000 that those who came to Germany as immigrants were eligible to claim German citizenship, which is why you have second and third generation Germans of Turkish origin who weren't able to claim citizenship for many decades. In France,
was that racially based, in that if you were white European, then you didn't have a problem, but if you were from Asia or from culturally diverse countries, then you did?
Well, in the German case, you could only be eligible for German citizenship if your grandfather or someone of that generation had German lineage or German ancestry. So, yes, there was something ethnically defined when it came to German nationality.
But not as clear-cut as something like the White Australia policy?
No. Perhaps not in the sense that there was a dictation test, but you did have to prove that you had German lineage in some way. And there's a fundamental difference there between how we've done citizenship here. So it doesn't matter where you're from, but since the abolition of White Australia and since the establishment of the Racial Discrimination Act, race and ethnicity and one's cultural background haven't been obstacles to Australians getting citizenship. Let me quickly touch on France and yeah. the UK, since I mentioned them earlier. Now, France have a very rigid assimilationist model when it comes to how they integrate their immigrants. So the expectation there is that you're French in public, and that's the only thing that matters. And that's why there's been such powerful hostility towards things such as the burqa and the niqab in France, which are, of course, banned in public. You can't wear those items of clothing in public. And that's because the French believe that you should be unambiguously French in how you carry yourself in public. If you do have a cultural identity, then that's something for your own private time and private business, but it's not for public consumption. Now, I think that's very different from multiculturalism, because multiculturalism means that you recognise that diversity is part of a national identity and that you can express your cultural heritage in public. And finally, if you look at Britain, I think the multiculturalism they've had there has been different to our nation-building form of multiculturalism. So the phrase that's defined multiculturalism in Britain has been the idea of a community of communities, this idea that you can have people from different parts of the world but living side by side in communities. And the implication has been that Britishness hasn't always been, or isn't necessarily an identity that can unify people. But in Australia, we've had a very unambiguous definition of what multiculturalism must mean in policy terms. Because it's defined as citizenship, it's about ensuring that rights to express your cultural identity are balanced by responsibilities. For example, the responsibility to commit to parliamentary democracy, to accept the rule of law, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, equality of the sexes, and English as a national language. So when we talk about Australian multiculturalism, we should bear in mind that we've struck a winning formula, and we've struck a winning formula that's very different from Europe, because we have seen it as being about citizenship and building a stronger Australia.
We'll go to calls in just 1 second. Just one more question just off the back of that. You do see cultural enclaves, though, where naturally people will tend, of very similar cultural backgrounds, will tend to live in areas together. So it's not as if it doesn't exist in Australia.
Oh, and as you say, it's natural. If you go to London, if you go to New York, you'll find enclaves of Australians there as well. I think what is crucial in assessing residential concentration is whether they're intergenerational concentrations. So if you do have communities that clump in one part of a city and they remain there across generations and you don't have social mobility, then that can be a problem.
And that's what we see in Australia, is that there may be those enclaves to start with, but they start to spread.
That's true. And if you look at the international experience, if you think that there are residential concentrations in Australia, then you actually find that Australian residential concentration of immigrant groups is relatively small. So even in those places that we may regard as being enclaves or ethnic precincts, if you think of places like Cabramatta in Sydney or Springvale in Sydney, or going back a few generations to places such as Carlton in Melbourne or Leichhardt in Sydney, those places are actually very diverse places in that you don't just have one ethnic group living there, despite appearances. Hmm. And what's important is to bear in mind that integration takes time. It's not something that happens overnight. I mean, I speak as someone who's the son of immigrants, and we came here in the 1980s, but if you're coming from a different country with a different cultural background and you speak a different language, then it's only natural that you will gravitate towards those places where you feel comfortable.
As Australians do overseas.
Precisely, and it's important that you do feel comfortable and that you can feel that you belong to society. Now, it may strike some people as an expression of difference, but give it some time, because we do have a record of doing things pretty well when it comes to integration. And what's important is that you do have that sense of belonging, and that there is no stigma attached to not being part of a majority, that you can eventually be an Australian if given the space and the time.
Good morning, Red. You there, Red? No, we'll come back to him. No, he's gone away. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor. How are you going?
Good, Shane.
Sorry, what was the other gentleman's name?
Oh, Tim.
G'day, Tim. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Shane. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Listen, when I actually first heard of the United Nations Agenda 21, I was a bit concerned, but in my work, I've been going over to Dandenong, and which is a United Nations program where they're doing successful multinational program there, where they've got a good... do you know about that program in Dandenong?
Oh, there are many programs in Dandenong. I'm roughly familiar with it, yes.
Yeah, about a couple of months ago, 20 representatives of the United Nations came over to see how the program was going in regards to multiculturalism.
Yep, Shane, I'll get you to explain quickly because we've got a whole stack of people to talk to.
No worries. I actually, in my work, I've been actually going into the major central shopping centre there, and I actually play chess there. There's a big chess board there, and I've actually been talking to a lot of different nationalities for a couple of years now, about 2 years, and I was pleasantly surprised that the vast majority of the people who have actually made Australia home were much more receptive than majority of Australians in the concerns that I have in regards to community problems we've got.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point, Tim, is that people that come here from other cultures may recognise how lucky we are in Australia and then may become more community interested.
There's no doubt in my mind that the biggest ambition and desire of those who come to this country are to integrate into Australian society and to be considered Australian. There's no greater badge of honour in that sense for many of those first generation Australians or second generation Australians here. You know, I think of the words of Al Grasby back in the 1970s, and he was the first politician really to talk about a multicultural Australia, but he referred to how in antiquity Romans would declare civis Romanus sum, or I am a Roman citizen, and know that those words carried resonance and meaning, and he hoped that I am Australian would be a similar declaration with the same power, and I think that's the kind of aspiration that is at the heart of multiculturalism. It isn't about rejecting Australian identity or community, but about ensuring that there's some way that everyone can buy into Australianness.
A text from Nana Trucker that says, Trev, you can see how well multiculturalism works by the Muslim rights in New South Wales.
Well, the Muslim rights in New South Wales, which I presume are a reference to the Hyde Park protests a few weeks ago, were an interesting episode. I think there was it was telling that Muslim community leaders universally condemned that because it was an expression of a fringe extremist part of that community. And if you look at the response that Muslim communities took to those protests, and you know, let me be clear about my position. I thought that the placards and signs declaring that one should behead those who insult the Prophet weren't consistent with the civic values of Australia. When you look at the response of Muslim leaders, though, I think you saw there a more representative face of multiculturalism than the faces than the face of that was expressed in the Sydney riots, which was the face of extremism.
Within that, though, it's been a common complaint for people who are against multiculturalism is that when people come from other cultures, they may bring with them the problems that they have within the countries that they've come from, whether it be people that are coming here that are Sudanese. Yeah. From the communities that they've lived in, which have been incredibly violent, and then having to deal with the police, whether it be the issues from Vietnam or Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia for that matter.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that there are always going to be some issues and some tensions that arise with communities, but we should keep a certain level of proportion and perspective with these things. I think it is important that those who arrive here don't import old historical conflicts and fights. But that's not to say that you will have episodes from time to time where that does happen. I think it's important, though, to ensure that we don't regard some episodes as representative when, in fact, they might not be representative at all.
And it's always very easy for the media to want to portray things to be as extreme as possible and not to recognise a community as the few that you see on television.
That's true. And you can talk about communities bring their conflicts, as it were, over to this country. But you know, that is a criticism that can be levelled at every community that has arrived in Australia, or many communities that have arrived in Australia, whether they're from Europe or from Asia or from elsewhere. What's important is to take a long view and to exercise that kind of proportion I've talked about. I mean, I grew up in southwest Sydney in the 1980s and 90s. Trevor, and when I was growing up in that part of the world, in Cabramatta, was not far from where I grew up. You know, there was a lot of talk about, of course, Asian gangs and crime at the time, about Cabramatta being a ghetto. But if you look at Cabramatta today, it's a tourist destination when you go to Sydney, and that's you know, ghetto one day, crime haven one day, and a tourist destination the next. But that only took place in the space of a decade or two.
I mean, for goodness sake, if you want to go far enough back, we can go back to Irish and British politics from the very first settling of Australia. I mean, it happens all the way through. We'll go back to calls. Viv?
Oh, hi, Trev.
Yes, Viv?
Hi. I was just interested that you said that multiculturalism isn't practiced the same way everywhere in the world as here, which is true, but really, unless I missed something, you only talked about Western Europe, but what about the Asian countries and the Arabic countries? And when you said France, people have to be unambiguously French, that wasn't the rationale behind banning the burqa, which I don't agree with, by the way, but the rationale was that France wanted, they're very, very strongly secularist. They want a secularist society, and they don't want any displays of, but you've got a sort of first allegiance is to the state rather than to any religious group.
And that's fair, Viv. I don't want to continue too much on the France situation, but I'm glad that you brought up Asia, and especially with the Australian government wanting to forge greater links with Asia, Tim. Is Asia necessarily very welcoming of Australians or Europeans within their countries as much as we are wanting Asians to come to ours?
Asian countries aren't traditionally countries of immigration. So if you look at countries such as Australia or Canada or America, New World countries, as you might call it, I mean, these are countries with long histories of migration, that are countries that are built literally and figuratively by immigrants. But you have many countries in Asia where the idea of nationality is still defined in terms of blood and ancestry, in ways very similar to the way that Germans and Europeans might understand their sense of nationhood. And at the moment, you have countries such as Japan or Korea who have substantial populations of immigrants from elsewhere, and they're grappling with the challenge of integrating guest workers or temporary migrants. And I think this points to an interesting contribution that Australia could make to the Asian century. If we take our multiculturalism seriously, and other countries certainly take our multiculturalism seriously because they look to us as a laboratory and as an example, and Shane earlier talked about visitors from the UN going to Dandenong. You know, I think he's referring there to the Global Alliance of Civilizations. But if you put things into comparative perspective, into the bigger picture, this is one of the things that Australia could perhaps contribute to Asia, a sense of multiculturalism that can help Asian countries build a sense of citizenship that moves away from ancestry and ethnicity and towards something that is more civic. We often think of the Asian century as something that we can extract from or something that will benefit only us. But if we are going to be part of the region, we need to think about what we can contribute to the region. And I actually think that our multiculturalism might be an important civic export.
Tim, we'll go to calls first. Florence.
Hello.
Yes, Florence.
Can I say hi to Tim?
Yeah.
Tim, hi, Florence.
I came out from England in 1948 and landed in Carramar.
That's where my family actually lived when we first arrived, which is why I chuckled. We had an aunt in Carramar.
You lived in Quest Avenue.
River Avenue was my street.
Well, there you go. I'm 78, and I'm so glad I didn't go back.
Okay, Florence, what is it that you think is important about a thing like multiculturalism and what multiculturalism brings to Australia?
Well, I'm an elderly blind person. And the last 20 years, I've had Asian students living with me from every part of Asia. And they've been the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me.
Thank you very much. And this is where, if you choose to take it on in a positive way thing, then Tim, then people get positive experiences.
No, indeed. And what a wonderful story from Florence there, having students living with her for the past 20 years. I mean, we are having a debate about the Asian century at the moment. It's important that we see that as an opportunity for us to learn from the region and to contribute to the region, and not just as something that creates economic opportunities for us. My sense is that we often take a ruthlessly mercenary or mercantilist tone towards our interaction with the region, but there is perhaps something deeper.
A couple of texts here. The only problem with multiculturalism is when these people try to change the Australian way. Another one that says the most important thing to recognise is that Australia has a culture. It is not just an amalgam of cultures from other countries. We need to protect our culture. I find this interesting is that is Australian culture, in inverted commas, just in fact an amalgamation of a whole stack of other cultures? And do we actually have an Australian culture? I'm not sure what the Australian culture or the Australian way is.
It's a very important point to talk about, Trevor. I don't think there is anything meaningful about talking about an authoritative or singular Australian culture. I mean, what do we actually mean? Does it mean that everyone has to like the beach and and have barbecues or play sport. I mean, look, don't get me wrong, I like all these things, Trevor, myself, but I mean, not everyone will like the beach. Not everyone will watch cricket during the summer. We all have our own ways of being Australian and contributing to Australian life.
Do we also just have this vision of Australians in the outback wearing hats and boots and riding horses? Do we have this strange perception that we are something from the man from Snowy River?
Well, the bush legend has been a powerful motif in how Australians think about the national identity for a long time. But I think there's a distinction that can be made between a lifestyle culture, all the kinds of things that we've just talked about, and a civic culture. Now, when people say that, oh, we have to defend an Australian culture, or it's important that there is an Australian culture that people sign up to, you know, I can agree with that if we're talking about civic culture, if we're talking about things such as an Australian democracy or a value of a fair go and an aspiration of giving everyone a go, allowing people to have a go. We often don't believe that these get to the core of our Australianness, but I, for one, think that there's a powerful Australian democratic tradition that that we should be celebrating as something that can integrate or be a powerful draw to people. So for me, if you look at culture in that civic sense, a civic culture, then perhaps that's a more powerful way of talking about Australianness than to talk about the sun, the sea and the surf and the bushman.
I mean, if we really want to get down to brass tacks, if we're going to take a look at Australian culture, then we need to take a look at the Indigenous cultures, if we really want to get into it.
And that's a good point. You know, a lot of people ask me, well, how does multiculturalism relate to Indigenous Australia? Where do they belong in the picture? And I think it's you know, the honest answer from me is to recognise that there are Indigenous Australians who don't always express enthusiasm about multiculturalism because they believe that cultural diversity may amount to a form of devaluing the place of Australia's First Peoples and Indigenous cultures. So there is a, I think it's crucial to acknowledge that there can be tensions in that respect. But for me, I think there's a very natural alignment between Indigenous Australia and multiculturalism, which is that multicultural Australia should be open to learning from other traditions and cultures, and there's no older set of cultures than the Indigenous cultures from which we can learn.
Hello, Shani.
Hello.
Yes, Shani.
Look, I believe this word multiculturalism was invented by big, very powerful, rich colonists who wanted to colonise the world, and they wanted to call the people that they brought in as slaves to other countries, and they wanted to call that country multicultural. And that is the only reason we have multicultural. We have dark skins for a reason. We have plants in their proper places for a reason.
So do you think that people need to stay within their own countries and not move around?
Well, no. I think there should be freedom of movement. I don't believe that multinational companies should be bringing in people to other countries as slaves, or using the indigenous people of the countries they wish to colonise as slaves, or actually ostracising them from their own lands.
Shani,
that is what multiculturalism amounts to.
Shani, I've got to move on because I've got five more people to go to. Tim, do you want a 30-second response?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ostracising anyone. I want to be part of Australia, and I suspect that those of us who champion multiculturalism have no more powerful desire than to be part of the country. And going back to what I said earlier, the word multiculturalism wasn't one coined until the 1970s, and in Australia it was Al Grasby who introduced it to the country.
Jules, good morning.
G'day. I live in the Footscray Council area, Melbourne, and I moved here 26 years ago, and I absolutely love it. We've got African and everybody.
So what is it that makes it good?
Because I just had a stroke. Now, I'm okay at the moment, but I was in hospital, Western District Hospital, right? And every nurse that came near me was from some other country. It was just magnificent. And everybody mixes here. Nobody, you know, all the advertising they get for negativity, I don't believe it happens. I come from southeastern suburbs, and they were such snobs. In the first week I came here 26 years ago, at the whole work I went, this is beautiful. No one's condescending. No one's patronising. I literally fell in love with it. In 26 years, I'm still here, and this is my home.
Jules, thank you. I'm going to go through a few calls. Hello, Mary.
Hi.
Yes, Mary.
Although I agree with everything Tim said, I don't think Australia is as welcoming to immigrants as they could be. My parents immigrated here over 40 years ago, and I've many times been the recipient of racist comments. I was born, educated, and lived here all my life. I only speak, read, and write in English, and yet once a month, receive a racist comment.
What country for you is your family from?
Originally from Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbour, we had a party over the weekend, and as you do on the Melbourne Cup long weekend, and barbecue, lots of people over, and a neighbour just came over and told me to go back where I came from. I hear this.
Would you say? But it's here.
Pardon?
Did you say? But it's here. This is where I come from.
Yeah, well, I said I was. Yeah, that's what I said.
Tim,
go back. You've got no right to be here. I said, excuse me. I've worked and lived and been educated here. I've got just as much of a right to be in this country as you do.
Tim, is that one of the things that we forget, is that people may be second, third, fourth generation Australian but may still have an Asian appearance?
Yeah, well, you know, people always ask me, where are you from, Tim? And I'll say, oh, I'm from Melbourne. And they'll say, oh, no, before that. And I'll say, well, I was born in France. And they'll say, oh, but where are you really from? And I'll say, oh, well, you mean where are my parents from? And good on you, Mary, for giving back as good as you got. You're absolutely right to highlight that racism remains a problem in Australia. And though we've done remarkably well, in my opinion, as a multicultural country, it remains a work in progress. And you're not alone in experiencing racism. Something between 10 to 15% of Australians report that they've experienced racism during the past 12 months. Now, we're never going to eradicate racism from the face of the earth,
yep.
But it's important that we try our best to reduce it and to fight it when it does happen.
Hello, Winsome.
Hello, Trevor. I'm afraid I'm not popular with my beliefs, but I don't like the way they come to this country and then want to change our ways to suit their ways.
And how does that happen?
Well, with the Muslims, I know of a case in a country town in Victoria where a man went to the swimming pool. He wanted to see his daughter and he wasn't going to be allowed in because the Muslim girls were swimming.
And which pool was it?
It's a country town. Look, I'm sorry, I can't think of the name. It's where they make fruit. It's got a high Muslim population.
What generally happens there, though, is that sometimes they'll have, and I've only heard of it happening in a city baths, where they'll have days that are simply only for women so that Muslim women can swim, but not that they've stopped men from going in because unless it's completely closed off.
Well, this man created such a fuss, in the end they had to let him in. But, I mean, they've come into our country, Trevor. We haven't gone into theirs.
Yeah.
And the same with, like, I know in Sydney they objected to a lot of the religious instructions and Christmas decorations and things like this. This is going back quite a while ago now. But, I mean, if they're so keen to come here, why can't they adapt? And I'm afraid I do agree with France about banning the burqa. I really don't think it's right. I mean, I remember on the news some years ago, a girl, an Australian girl, was banned from wearing a cross around her neck at high school.
But that's more to do with jewellery than it is to actually wearing a cross.
Well, I don't think so.
We're coming up to the news, so I quickly want to go to Tim. Tim, do you just want to comment on some of those things?
Yeah, well, I mean, with the cross, I think Winston might actually be correct there, because in France, the ban with the headscarf in schools was also one that was extended to any conspicuous piece of religious item. But if I can quickly address Winston's concerns, I think national identities change over time. They evolve, and we have to be open to them evolving if we are to have a sense of Australianness that's going to be powerful enough to be common to all. I think of how cappuccino today is now Australia's most popular hot beverage, or how modern Australian, as our cuisine is something that fuses Asian and European flavours. I think when Italians first began arriving in substantial numbers in the 1940s and 50s, no one would have thought that the cappuccino would have enjoyed that status in our life. But it just goes to show that national identities, cultures and practices do change.
They do.
And they do evolve with time.
Tim, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor. My pleasure.
And we've only just touched on this conversation, and thank you to everybody who joined us as well. Dr. Tim Soutphommasane from the National Centre for Australian Studies. And the book is called Don't Go Back to Where You Came From. This is Overnights on your local ABC.